Hello, everybody. Welcome to the special Halloween edition of LE2B. I'm Tom McCaffrey. I'm here with Eric B. How are you? We have a guest coming in, but let's get start off. This is going to be coming out the day before Halloween. So today we decided to do something we did last year, which is talk about our favorite horror movies of all time, because this is the time of year where they keep showing them all over, and this is the time. This is the most accepted time of year to watch horror movies, I guess. Where it's not weird.
Not June? I thought June was a good time.
Yeah, no, not anymore. That's why people. I feel like it does seem like less okay when you're just sitting at home watching horror movies not around Halloween. I mean, maybe it's not, but.
Well, I think if you
feel like my girl. Yeah, exactly. I feel like my girlfriend's a little more open to them around now. Like, she's not into me just being like, oh, you want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3 tonight? Like, no, isn't it Valentine's Day?
Hey.
Hey, our guest is here. All right. So,
can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Cool.
So, we have a returning guest. He's been on it a few times. I met him a long time ago as a comedian, and he's a screenwriter, and he wrote the Netflix film The Day Shift, the horror comedy with Jamie Foxx and Snoop Dogg. Tyler Tice, how are you? Thanks for coming back.
I'm good. How you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Good. Are you still in Florida?
Yeah, I'm actually in Orlando right now. It's my daughter's birthday this weekend, and we took her to Peppa Pig World. So I've been at Peppa Pig World all day with four kids.
Nice.
Oh, wow. That's scary. That's scary in itself.
That's a horror story. Right.
Do you want to just talk about that as your favorite scary movie or experience?
The
Day Shift, you probably could have originally called it The Night Shift, but that was an old movie. Do you remember that movie?
That was it. Well, that's where I got the name from. It's there was the old movie, the Ron Howard movie with Michael Keaton and Henry Winkler, where they become pimps.
Yeah,
and then
that's a good movie.
I actually had that on. I have that on VHS, and then I had the Stephen King short storybook Night Shift. They were like both in my room when I came up with the idea for the title. So I'm like,
I just bought that book.
Did you
the Night Shift? The Stephen King book. I just saw it in the bookstore, and I'd never read any of those short stories. And Children of the Corn is one of the stories in there.
Yeah, it's in there.
And That I like that movie. That I'm sure you've had this experience where, like, when I saw Children of the Corn, I saw it when I was like 10 or 11. I was
and it was terrifying.
Like, terrified me. Like literally, you couldn't have told me there was anything scarier than this movie. And I rewatched it, and it's like it's laughably bad. It's not. It's first of all, it's all during the day.
Yeah.
Like, which you know. That's not the most terrifying, you know, time of day to make something. I guess it seems like it's the easiest time to make it.
It's better for filming.
I know yours is during the day for the most part, but yours is more kind of like a vampire, almost like comedy thing.
Yeah. Well, it was supposed to be boring during the day. That was the whole thing. They do all the work during the day.
Yeah. Right.
It was like
my friend Andrew Ginsberg. My friend Andrew Ginsberg has this funny joke about Stephen King because he wrote a lot of his books when he was all drugged and drunk, like he was an alcoholic.
Yeah, he doesn't even remember writing like Cujo or something.
Right. So my friend, he has a joke how he's clean. He doesn't do alcohol drink anymore. But he's like, yeah, when I used to drink, I would just wake up the next morning like, what did you do last night? He's like, oh, I got wasted. I smashed this, whatever. And then he's like, you say the same thing as Stephen King. He's like, I wrote Pet Sematary.
Yeah, I wrote a hit book.
I wrote something that's going to set me up for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it is kind of and do you remember there was a time, not so much anymore, but there was a time where like just they would make anything that he wrote into a movie.
Yeah, anything. Yeah. And I feel like they still almost do. Like it's like, I don't think there's ever not been something by Stephen King out.
Yeah.
They were making them, you know, because they, you know, like it, they redid. I always say this with Stephen King, and you're the expert. A lot of the movies, sometimes the big knock on them was they didn't translate well to the film. And I think a lot of it was because the books were so long, they had to leave out so much.
Well, look at it. It was like, 1,200 page book?
Right.
Even the movies, it's like two, three hour.
Yeah, they have to split it up. Yeah. The best Stephen King movies were from short stories, like The Body.
I think that transfers better. Yeah.
Yeah. And Shawshank.
Totally.
Yeah.
I heard they're actually making his grocery list that he wrote last week in the movie. That seems like how it started to get to that point. Like anything he wrote down, they were just like, they were like a note that he left for his wife. Like, hey, what is this? Call Steve? Yeah, we got to make this.
Who owns this IP?
This is hilarious. But it's funny because he was great at, you know, writing these, you know, books and short stories that were, I mean, they weren't always like horror, but usually they skewed towards horror. But he really could never find his way writing for movies, like writing screenplays or making movies. Like
Maximum Overdrive. You ever seen
Maximum?
That?
Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I'm sure. I mean, have you seen it, Eric? Like, yeah, Maximum Overdrive? It's really bad. And apparently that was when he was really in his coke phase.
Yeah, I heard he was all coke. Like he was in the scene. Wasn't he in like one scene? He gets killed by a soda machine, I think. He gets killed by something. And I heard he gets killed.
No, he doesn't get killed. He's in the way beginning where the ATM tells him to fuck off.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I heard he was like coked out of his head for that. But a soda machine does kill somebody, I believe.
It does. It's a baseball game. That's one of the best. Out. That's one of the best scenes.
Wasn't he in Creep? He was in Creep Show too, remember?
He was.
Yeah.
He's in Creep Show. Yeah.
He's actually a mold who like blew his head off in the fucking bathtub.
I mean, he's a funny dude too. He's
and I think
funny.
Joe Hill was in that, who's his son, who's also a writer.
Oh, no way.
I think in a lot of ways a better writer than his father.
What is his son written? Has he written books or movies?
Yeah, he wrote a book called, it's called Nosferatu, but it's like a license plate.
Yeah.
And they made that into an AMC series. I read that. That was pretty good. He's really good. He's a really good short story writer. He has this book called 13th Century. No. Maybe that's what it's something ghosts, something century, 20th century ghosts. That's what it's called. And it's a really good book of short stories. Some of them are like horrifying.
But aren't you
still stick with me?
But aren't you so impressed by Stephen? Like, I almost feel like he didn't write all those books. He did. But you know how sometimes authors, they don't write all the books. I mean, it's like so much. He has to be a genius, I think, right?
I just don't even know where he finds the time. Like, I'm a professional writer. That's what I do. I don't have that fucking time. I mean, he's got a lot of kids too. He's the same thing. Like, I don't know where he finds that time.
He's been like hit by cars and stuff. I remember one time.
I think he probably gets more help raising his kids than you do.
Yeah, probably. I have to do it all myself. So.
Well, maybe your wife should start writing horror books then if you're doing it all. Just a quick side. I headlined in Portland, Maine. This was years ago, and I had to do morning radio, which is just, you know, such a nightmare. I hadn't really done that much, and they were like, "Hey, welcome to Maine. Like, have you been like taking in the sights? Have you been enjoying it?" I was like, "Oh, pretty good." You know, I was driving this morning. I saw Stephen King walking on the side of the road, and I ran into him. So, and they did not like that.
Oh,
they
got
so mad.
Dude.
That's their national treasure up there.
I was like, "All right, well, come out to my show tonight, everyone."
Well, actually, I'm looking up what his, because I like his Twitter feed, but I didn't realize that, you know, that shooter that was in Maine. That mm-hmm. happened this week. I want. He must have some comments about it because he gets very political on his Twitter.
He's very anti-gun too. Yeah.
Well, do you know? Also, he would write under he would write books under a pseudonym,
Richard Bachman. That's what he wrote. The Running Man. Remember the Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah,
that was a Bachman book.
So wait, why does he do that? Like, is
I don't
it,
know.
So, but that's how many books he's writing. He actually has, and the Running Man was made into a great. That another thing I've noticed is a lot of his best translated movies from his books to movies are not horror stories, The Running Man and Stand By Me
and Green Mile and
Green Mile,
Shawshank Redemption.
Jesus. Also, Little Women. That one was good. I'm just kidding. It just seems like he's written everything when you go down the list. And also, he famously didn't like the Kubrick's The Shining.
But I've heard different mixed things about that. Like, I've heard he hated it, then I heard he had like some small disagreements with him.
Well, I think he started to warm up to a little bit, especially after he made his own version of The Shining with Stephen
Weber.
Bauer from
Stephen Weber.
We talked about that in
Colorado. I've been to that hotel, the Estes Park, whatever. It's in Estes Park. I've been to that hotel before.
You the one that Kubrick shot it at?
No, the one that Weber was in. The TV, the made-for-TV remake.
Yeah, that like, I went there with my family,
and they're like, "This is where The Shining was shot." I'm like, "This doesn't really look like it." And like, "Oh, it's the TV version."
They're like, "No, the bad one." Yeah. But maybe that kind of like maybe that kind of opened his eyes a little bit. Like, "Oh, I'm not good at making movies."
Well, because the thing in the movie was he has an axe in the Kubrick one, and then in that one he has a croquet mallet. And that's what Stephen King wanted, the croquet mallet in the movie.
You're not chopping down a door with a croquet mallet.
That is not scary. Stephen Weather.
Cinematic, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of strange because the book is really good, but the movie's also really good. But I think the movie's really good because Kubrick had like his own take on it. And it was a very strong take on it. And it was different. So it's kind of like, that's why movies usually are shitty. Have you read
the book The Shining?
Yeah, a couple of times.
Is it scary? I've never read it.
Yeah, it's scary. It's really good. It's really scary, and it is really different. And I mean, it's, you know, that's the thing with him that's so great is he really does kind of, he's good at, you know, describing everyone's, you know, what's going on inside their head. Oh, and you can't do that.
That's why his books are like 1,200 fucking pages.
Right. So like you can't translate it into a movie as well as he writes it.
Well, I have a question for Tom, actually. You read the book. So the funny thing, The Simpsons actually made fun of it, is like the Scatman Crothers character, he spends the whole movie traveling, getting up there, and you think there's going to be a long, drawn out fight scene. The second he walks in, Nicholson kills him. Yeah. And it's kind of comical. And The Simpsons, when they made fun of it, where like Groundskeeper Willie kept, and then he was in other scenes where he would just come in and someone would just kill him immediately.
Just kill him right away. Yeah.
I think probably in the book, that character had more to do. Am I wrong? Or
There's probably more in the head, right? Like with the Shining.
The reason it's so good, The Shining too, is because like there's so much going on in his head where the spirits are talking to him and he's hearing it in his head. Because, you know, it's all an allegory for alcoholism. So, and, you know, I think spirits was kind of a play on that, but he kind of has spirits in his head talking to him, telling him to do things. So, and they're all, that's why they don't really explore it and they don't really explain in the movie, but the scene where they do talk about that he's a sober alcoholic, former alcoholic, but he just kind of has a drink from out of nowhere at the bar. But it's more of a struggle. I feel like the problem he had with the movie is like Jack Nicholson from the beginning of the movie is like crazy. Like from the beginning, from the first shot of the movie, he's already kind of like crazy.
And it's like more of a descent into madness.
But the book is like the guy's normal because Jack Nicholson just shows up and he's like, hey, like he already just seems kind of like scary. But I don't know. You're going to like shit on Kubrick. You know what I mean? It's like, you're a good writer of scary books. Like Kubrick's like an amazing filmmaker. Just fucking relax. Like you can't do that.
Feel honored. He took your book and made it like,
and made it good.
But I think, the problem is, and Tyler definitely knows this, like, as I was reading about horror movies, why they're popular, because they don't really want famous people in them. So it keeps the budgets lower most of the time, because really scary movies, people want to see themselves in the characters. So if it's like Jack Nicholson, it takes you out of it. So maybe in that respect, that movie, The Shining, was basically a Jack Nicholson movie. Yeah. So maybe if you had a no-name actor doing that, it would have been a little more believable.
No, I think the kid stole the movie from Nicholson and Scatman Crothers too. But to answer your question, Scatman Crothers, Halloran in the book lives, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really?
It helps them get out.
Does he have like a big titty Afro bitch on his wall?
Yeah. I mean, that's like another weirdly specific choice Kubrick makes where he has, it's comical where, cause you're talking about how he has the one POV of him watching the TV. There's a huge painting of a hot black chick with huge tits. And then it cuts to him looking at him from the TV. And there's another one of a hot black chick. And it's like, all right, dude, we get it. Like, he's black.
Oh, he's black. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then he puts on that dashiki when he goes to help them. But it's a cool scene because he's trying to help them out of the hotel. They get them in the snowplow that he drove up there, and the voices start telling him to kill them. Ghost.
Oh.
Scatman Crothers was one of those actors like Wilford Brimley who was always old. He was just always old.
Yeah.
Well, I heard Wilford Brimley in Cocoon was like 49 or something like that.
He was. He was. Yeah. That's really weird. I'm experiencing that a lot where I see you just the age that people used to be like.
Cliff Clavin watching, from Cheers was like 35 or something like that.
I was watching.
Like a 35-year-old to me is like a fucking embryo now.
You might as well be like 20. Yeah. Like I was watching Bull Durham the other day and Kevin Costner is supposed to be this really old washed up baseball player who's like so past his prime. It's like he barely should like they're almost commenting that like he needs to be put out to pasture and how why is he even like alive still? And he's like 33. Yeah.
But back in the day, like people aged harder. Like you watch like an old Abbott and Costello movie and like, oh, Abbott, he looks probably he's like 23. He looks like he's 62. You know, people just aged harder back then.
I think they just lived harder too. I don't know. It's just
actually Jack Nicholson in The Shining. He looks so, you know, haggard. And
he's my age. I think he was like 40, I think 43, 44.
He's like 41. It's like insane. I mean, he looks old. I mean, people just cellularly, we've been, it's like changed or something. I don't know.
We have better product, better soap.
I don't know.
I think it's also we have more of a connection to like, you know, through social media. And like, we have more of a connection to the younger culture, right? I feel like at a certain point, like back in the day, like you just got cut off and you don't know anything about the kids.
Just, I think you were, it was like, you were just sort of supposed to be, people embraced more not being a kid. It was like, well, I'm 23. I better like get my shit together.
But also maybe the smoking, because I saw All the President's Men recently, and there's one scene Dustin Hoffman just goes into this woman's house and lights up a cigarette and he goes, you got an ashtray? Doesn't even ask. But that's what it used to be.
Like, of course you'd have an ashtray.
I just watched Mad Men for the first time. I'd never seen it before, and I watched it straight through, and you can just see like half the, they were drinking so much that like when they would stop, they would go into like, they didn't even realize how much they were drinking. So like pissing their pants and going into like DTs and shit like that.
And they all had kids. They all like had kids immediately. It wasn't even a question of it. I don't even think you were allowed to. I don't even think it like was a concept that they even grasped of like not having kids.
They're like, well, now we have to have kids, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And all the smoking, I heard they smoked, the cigarettes they smoked on the show were like full of lettuce. Like they're these cigarettes that are not addicting and they're not really. But so they, because you know, you could be on that channel and get you hooked on smoking, you know?
Yeah. I'd probably just rather take a cigarette than lettuce. Like, see me the fucking cigarette. I smoked for like 20 years. I'll be okay.
All right. So we're going to do it. Yeah, so, you know, this is the thing we did. I think it was around this time last year where we can get into it, where I asked Tyler and Eric to, you know, pick a couple of their favorite horror movies, one from like, you know, back in the day and one from this year. So I did it as well. And the first one, I'll start with my old one. The first one I picked was, you know, it's like a, I know it's considered a classic, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it almost seems kind of hacked to choose that. But I feel like I almost recently realized how great that movie is. And I just rewatched it like a few nights ago with my, I got my girlfriend to watch it. That's kind of what I was talking about with like, you can do that around Halloween and get away with it.
Yeah.
I don't think in July, like, you want to watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre tonight? Like she wouldn't, she'd be like, why would we do that? So I rewatched it, and I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, right? Both of you
I've seen it. Yeah, it's been a while. I recently watched the second one though, which is fucking terrible.
You know, people love the second one. I really didn't like it. I know it's like a comedy, but I think it drags. I don't know.
It does. It like falls apart in the middle. They're just like insane. They're like dancing around with the women, and it's just like it's too long. It's like too much.
It is long. But
you know who the narrator, you know who the narrator is at the beginning of that movie, right?
John Larroquette.
Yeah. Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, didn't he get paid in weed? I think I heard this recently. Yeah. Like he got paid in weed to do it.
I think he said it was one of like his first things he ever did as an actor. And it's he's so recognizable. His voice is still so recognizable. Meaning like he sounds exactly like John Larroquette. Mm-hmm. And he's good. He has a good voice. And it does start the movie in a very ominous tone that's very fitting for it, where it just immediately is scary. You know what I mean? First of all, that title is just so like provocative and amazing. Just immediately when you hear that, you're like, wait, what the fuck? What is this?
Well, that was our grail. I remember when I was like, it was like third and fourth grade. We really got into horror movies. It's like the late 80s. And that was like the grail. Like we never saw that. And then when we saw it, we rented it and we watched it like 30 times that weekend.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's just, and we were like in fourth, we didn't like that movie. We just, you know, we just wanted to say we did. And we saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Did you?
It wouldn't work if it was in another state. I don't think it would work, like the New Jersey State Massacre. That right? No, wouldn't be as scary. It has to be Texas or Florida, maybe.
Yeah, and if it was a New Jersey Chainsaw Massacre, you'd be rooting for the chainsaw guy. You'd be like, "Cool, yeah, kill him." That guy cut me off. But I was reading an article, and so Toby Hooper said he came up with the idea. He was like waiting in line at like, I don't know, some like hardware store, and he was really mad, and he saw like these Black and Decker chainsaws, and you kind of had the fantasy of taking one and just killing everyone at the store because it blocking him. And then he said, and it's one of those things. All right, you probably hear this. Like, you know, you read these things and they'll be like, you know, the greatest movie in the world and the greatest screenplay. And they'll be like, yeah, the story came to me in 5 seconds. I just saw something. And then the entire story just came to me like from God. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, you fucking like wrote something that. Do you think that's true? It just like pisses me off. Like that they're
like,
I don't
think it's probably as true as they say it is. It's probably like they saw something like there was one like for Day Shift, for instance. I got an inspiration because I watched the movie What We Do in the Shadows, and there was a vampire hunter.
Mm.
And like that's what inspired that. But it was like a year, you know what I mean? From that point
right.
to like putting it together and like, you know, I mean, just
you didn't see like Jamie Foxx and Dave Franco, like, you know, doing things in 5 seconds in your thing.
And they'll always be like, I mean, they do this in the movies. They'll be like, oh, I had an idea. And they go right to the computer and they're like, do you know how much fucking outlining I do? I'm just sitting there with a notebook and another notebook and like.
I've had so many instances where something will come to me, but something will just kind of come to me really quickly. And then like, I kind of ride this wave of motivation and enthusiasm. And then just a day later, I'm like, yeah, this is hard. I don't want this. I don't know what's going on.
Well, you
like, you
hear the story about James Cameron came up with the Terminator and then from a dream, he dreamed about the Terminator. And I'm like, my dreams are like, I'm naked back in high school. You know, I'm late for a test where my teeth are falling out. You can't make a movie about that.
Yeah. My dreams are kind of like hack. They're just dreams that everyone's like, oh, I've had that dream.
You're just like, unoriginal.
Yeah. I dreamt Police Academy 4 like in 1998. Like,
not even the first one.
The shittiest when they got shitty. One reason I love the genre of horror, I think a reason a lot of people do is because, you know, I think when you're young, you just look at it as like, oh, it's just kind of mindless violence or whatever. And it's just meant to, you know, scare people and get a reaction. But the best ones, you know, obviously are kind of like a reflection of society, like what's happening exactly in that moment in society. And so he kind of talks about that, how in the, because it was 73, I think he made it that.
Yeah. I think it came out in 74.
Yeah. And it was sort of like a reflection of the era where, like Nixon had, you know, it was like right around the times like Nixon had just been reelected and there's all this turmoil. Like
the biggest landslide ever too.
Yeah. And like the country was in a weird place. And then like the Manson family murders happened. It was kind of like shifting from the 60s to the 70s. Everything became really dark and, you know, Vietnam was going on. And so it's interesting if you watch it, because it is kind of like the whole movie is kind of like centered around like terror and chaos, and no one knows like their way around, and no one knows what's going on and can like figure out what's going on, like can tell up from down. So it really has that like feeling and like vibe to it, where it's just, you're like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, where are they? And like, what have they just wandered into? And like, it
that's really interesting too, because it's almost like they're in a house and it's like, this is a house, we should know what a house is. It's like, this is our country, we should know what it is. And then just shit goes fucking haywire and dark and everybody's getting fucking murdered and hung on meat hooks and shit,
right? Whereas, exactly. And it's kind of like it was also like the collapse of the nuclear family, and it was like, what, like
everybody's,
what's going,
divorced
on?
And shit.
And like just everything was like bottoming out. It's, I mean, I wasn't alive, but that's what they, I feel like it's
the
sort of
crisis
a
crisis hit. The Bronx was burning and all that. That was all the fucking 70s.
And people weren't like, you know, willing to kind of like it feels like now a little bit like people were just kind of like so fed up. They're like, I'm not playing by the rules anymore. I'm just going to do whatever I want. And also the other thing is kind of, you know, in Vietnam is a big aspect too, because like they kind of wander into this landscape they're not familiar with. And they just kind of like walk. First of all, it's really interesting because they don't get lured in anywhere. The kids, they kind of like go explore on their own. And
that's
like
always bad to do in a harm.
What got them in the house? What? Did they run out of gas and they went in the house? Is that
no, they go. Well, they're running out of gas. And it's
I remember there's like a guy earlier that lives in the house and he like cuts his hand on a picture in the car or something like that.
He like. Yeah, they pick up a hitchhiker, which is like, all right, just already bad news in the 70s, just picking up a hitchhiker. And he looks crazy. And so anyway, like, you know, he basically cuts his hand and like, wipe, you know, and then they get him out of there and wipes blood and like a symbol, which is basically like, that's, I was watching with that girlfriend. I'm like, that's when you turn around, you know, just go home. Because they're like, but they're like, no, we want to go see where my grandmother's house was. You know what I mean? It's just, first, it doesn't even sound like a fun, like outing at all. And even with the guy with the knife, they're just like, yeah, let's just keep going. And then they go to the, like, what's really interesting, because it has the, it's before all the horror movies were made. So it's like, the tropes aren't really there yet. Where like they go to the gas station, the guy's really weird. And the harbinger usually is like, what are you doing? Like, don't go there. You're all going to die. And the guy's like kind of normal. And they're like, he's like, what are you doing? And they're like, we're going to go to my grandmother's house. And he's like, don't go there. Like, you shouldn't go. Like, he's not like, hey, you're going to, he's like, you don't want to go there. Like, and he's one of the guys later that comes is part of the family. Yeah. And he's trying to like get, he's like, don't, I'm telling you not to go there. And so it's Vietnamish in that way, you know, because it's like, you don't want to go there. You don't know what's going on there. And you're really going to be out of your depth. And then they basically are wandering around and they stumble onto like Leatherfit, the worst house in the world. And like, they're like, hey, like, let's go inside.
It kind of is like Vietnam. Like, hey, we're America. We can win any war. And then we go into the jungle. And then
well, James Cameron said that Aliens was really an allegory for metaphor for Vietnam. That they would have these Marines, they came in there and they just weren't prepared and they weren't allowed to use their weapons. It was like the United States not being able to use nukes during Vietnam.
Well, and, actually, they just got overrun. Like those guys were fighting in those fucking jungles for like decades.
Yeah.
Tunnels. They knew their way around. And we went in there thinking we could like, you know, win any war and we just got massacred. I mean, I wouldn't say massacred, but we lost the war.
And one other thing you were saying.
This Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It didn't end well.
But one other thing you were saying, in the early 70s, the movies were very dark. And there was a lot of those, the devil movies started like The Exorcist, where people were throwing up in the theaters. And there was a lot of those movies in the early 70s. And then as the 70s progressed, the people wanted lighter fare. And the people point to the change was like in 1976, Rocky won the Best Picture Oscar. Rocky's a good movie, but it beat All the President's Men and Network. And they said the reason why was like people were just tired of the fucking depressing movies.
People just wanted to feel good.
Yeah.
They wanted someone to like win, or even though he doesn't win, it's like he didn't win, but he still won.
That's the best we can do. He didn't win, but like
it's such a reaction to Vietnam. Like he didn't win, but he won. That's how it works.
America.
And that's when Steve Martin
you win, you're still the best.
Steve Martin got popular in the late 70s because he said everyone was tired of the political comedy and the serious comedy. They just wanted to see a guy with an arrow in his head, you know?
I heard he was just like huge in the 70s too, like the late 70s. Like I know Steve Martin from the 80s, but like I heard prior to that, like his stand-up career, he was like just enormous.
Like, he was selling out stadiums.
Yeah.
He said he could. That's kind of why he stopped doing stand-up, because he just couldn't keep up. But he didn't know where to go from there, because it's like you sell at stadiums. What are you going to do after that? But that's why I almost feel like it's more relevant now too for what's going on in our country. Like, I mean, I know it's different, but it seems similar in a lot of like the vibe of life now in America. It's just so chaotic. Sad. It's just sad. Everyone's like not doing well. Mental health and, you know, these mass murders and stuff. So it's really funny watching it now, because it almost seems trite watching Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You're like, oh, he killed like four people. Oh, that's so cute, you know. But he's supposed to be like the craziest person in the world, and you're like,
or some dude in Maine just killed like 16 days ago.
Right. There's like kids murdering like 15 people.
But but I like how you say it kind of caught the essence of the time, because what was that movie? Was it called Don't Breathe, where the guy's blind and killing people?
Yeah, yeah.
And that took place, I don't know how old, 7-8 years ago, where it's like in Detroit and all the buildings were foreclosed on. I like movies like that because it's like, it feels so real, you know, and it's also commenting on the times also. So,
yeah. And that's the thing. I know everyone obviously comments the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. What makes it so scary is like, no one in it ever became famous besides John Larroquette, but like the actors, they're completely unknowns to this point to now. And, it's just so gritty. You're just, there's points you're watching, you're like, this just looks like this is happening. Like, it's just, so that is, it just adds an element to, I had to turn it off before the last 15 minutes because it just gets so intense. And it really is like it like wears on you, that movie. Like, it's a rough movie to watch.
It is. It's a hard watch. Yeah. Also, you know, the whole 70s was like the end of the studio system. So they were just like, they didn't know what the fuck to do. So they were just letting guys make whatever the fuck they wanted.
Right. And it was, like, and it was sort of like that, it was kind of the beginning of like the indie film almost, where someone was like, I'm just going to make a fucking movie in a house with a chainsaw.
It was like the Hollywood code. It kind of ended in the late 60s. You know, that's prevented from people from doing certain things in movies. And then you saw this, all these movies like Clockwork Orange, which is like today, I don't, that be a rough watch today. Clockwork Orange, some of the scenes, like the rape scene and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So Tyler, what's your first movie? Your old one?
My old movie? I'm based on the criteria that you said, I picked The Lost Boys. I think I've talked about it before on here, but just kind of like,
I love The Lost Boys.
So do I. I just feel like it's like lightning in the bottle of like that era. Like, you just like if you wrote a movie, if you're like, you know, like people make these like nostalgic bomb movies about the 80s. If you were going to write a movie about 1987, I don't think you could do a better job. It's like, oh, well, they, you know, they're these like cool vampires and they live at the beach and they fucking like
they ride motorcycles.
Yeah. And their mom works at a video store. And
Diane Wiest is in that.
Diane Wiest. Yeah. And the head vampire. I forget that guy's name. The grandfather from.
Edward Herman.
Yes, Edward Herman. Yep. And they're like, and even the guys, like the core, let's put the Coreys in it. And one of them's going to work at a comic book store.
Oh, peak Coreys.
Yeah. That's peak. I think that is peak Corey.
You know what's interesting? That's a movie that it's on TV all the time. And almost every time it's on, I put it on. It doesn't matter where.
Yeah.
But it, you know, interestingly, Corey Feldman and Corey Haim are good in it. Like, it's weird because they're really good, and then they were never good again. It's like, but it's weird to me. Why were they not able to be good anymore? They just caught them at such a perfect time.
I think it was all that. All the times they were raped. Maybe that was probably that probably didn't help their.
Yeah,
careers.
That probably didn't help. They kind of got the talent molested out of them. Yeah, that'll take its toll on.
I heard some story about Corey Haim. He was at a party and he thought he was about to do coke, but it was meth, and he didn't realize it was meth, so he just sucked it down like it was a bunch of lines of coke, and he was up for like a week straight, and that's what started his downfall.
I thought it was License to Drive. Right. You know that movie?
That's another two Corey.
That was when, because I think this was the first one, the Coreys. It was it's the one they met on, and then after that they were like kind of like, oh shit, we gotta capitalize on this.
Who directed The Lost Boys?
Joel Schumacher.
That's probably a big reason why it's good. They're good in it too, because he was good. But what else about that movie do you really like? Do you think it's scary at all?
No, I remember thinking it was scary when I was a kid, like certain scenes, but now I don't think it's scary at all. It's also the way it doesn't drag, like we were saying. It's just like even the end, it's like the end's great. I love watching people like prepare for things, like set up where they have their house all like, and they get the holy water and they get the fucking garlic, they get all the like the everybody knows all the tropes, and then they guard their house. There's a lot of good kills, and then you think maybe it's going the other way, and all of a sudden Grandpa comes in and kills him, and he's been there the whole time. And he has that great line at the end.
It has a good twist.
Yeah,
Wait, doesn't your movie ends on the same line?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I didn't write that line, but yeah, the director put it in there for an ode to Lost Boys.
What was the line?
Which I have no problem with. Snoop comes out of like the sewer at the end, and I don't really know what he's. I don't know if he's supposed to be a vampire now or what. Like he that character kind of got taken in a different turn than the way I wrote him. But he goes and he lights a blunt and he goes, thing I love about LA is all the goddamn vampires.
Oh, yeah.
He walks down the street. What's funny about that is in my version of Day Shift, everybody smoked a ton of weed and they drank. Like they're all like working class guys I knew in New Jersey. And they made me take everything out. They're like, this has to go. We can't have any drugs. Can't do any of this. And then all of a sudden they bring Snoop on. They have him smoking blunts the whole time. Right. And they got some like tie-in with some weed company where he had Day Shift, like weed infused pop rocks they were giving out at the premiere party.
Wow.
So
Tyler told me before the show that the original line was actually Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. That you wrote that line.
Yeah. I do remember though, what obviously when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow. Okay. That's a Lost Boys. And you know, obviously they flip it. Cause he says the thing I hate about Santa Carla. Is that what he says?
Yeah. It's all the goddamn vampires. He said, the thing I love about LA is all the goddamn vampires.
Was that Barnard Hughes?
You were probably okay with
that's
that.
That's who
right?
that was.
Yeah. I didn't care. The movie they made is not the script I wrote, but like, I like the movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
No, it's good. It's really good. And were they trying to get a certain rating?
I don't know what they were doing. I think they just wanted to make it more for everybody, not so like dark and gritty. Cause mine was more of a character study. It was like these guys that hunt vampires and it was how they live. And like, you know, I painted houses for years in New Jersey and I would be on work crews and I knew all these working class guys and that's who I based it on.
Yeah.
Those dudes, like as soon as they get off work, they get high as shit. They get drunk. Like that's what these vampire hunters did. And Netflix was like, no,
they would not get high in California after murdering vampires.
California,
the most stressful
too.
Job in the world.
Yeah. And even the director who came along, like he, like the second I met him, he picked me up in his car and lit up a joint and we just smoked weed the whole time I was out there. He like had all this weed that his mother-in-law grew. We were just smoking the whole time. And he's like, I love that there's tons of weed in your movie. He's like, it's part of the California culture. I'm like, exactly. And then they're like, nope.
Yeah, that's what do you think is, I mean, obviously I probably know the answer, but what do you think is better, Lost Boys or Fright Night?
Lost Boys.
Do you like Fright Night?
Yeah, I do. And you know what? I actually saw the remake recently and it's a lot better than I remembered it being.
Yeah, I didn't like it, but maybe I should watch it again.
I really didn't like the remake, but I think it was kind of, it's similar to what you said before, where I feel like it encapsulates an era of time, you know, in our call, you know, the 80s, it's just so 80s. And I don't know how you would capture that again. Obviously, I didn't think they made it not in the 80s, but it's just so like.
Plus the original felt like a real B movie, like almost felt like a movie that went right to cable. The new one was just too high production, I think.
Yeah.
But they, you know, it was like a sleeper. It was a surprise hit. It was like, I remember it came out that summer and I don't think they expected. They even said that when they were making it, the studio totally ignored them. They said that the director, Tom Holland.
Tom Holland.
Yeah. He said that, I think you're thinking of Savage Steve Holland.
Oh, what else did Tom Holland, did he do like,
He did Chucky, Child's Play.
What's the one? I was thinking, who did One Crazy Summer?
That's Savage Steve Holland. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Tyler, have you seen the show Chucky? Because I want to watch it. It's like on Peacock.
I watched the first two episodes and I really couldn't get into it. I didn't really know what they were doing there.
I thought it was okay. I never was a huge Child's Play. I feel like once the gag, it's kind of like funny and sort, but it's just like, all right, I don't want to watch a doll like just murder people over and over.
I thought the first one was pretty good. I rewatched the first one like a year ago, but I feel like that every sequel wasn't
the first one's good. Yeah, that they get really. But
I think the thing with that and every movie, horror movies owes something to the Twilight Zone, because almost every kind of horror movie, there was some Twilight Zone that was similar in some way. And there was one killer doll,
like the doll. So Tom Holland said when they were making Fright Night that the studio just had no faith in it. And so they were ironically, they said that they were focusing on the movie Perfect with John Travolta and Jamie Lee Curtis, where he was like writing a story about
is that
like
the
aerobics.
One where he's like an aerobics instructor.
He's an aerobics instructor and he's writing a story. It's like an expose of aerobics culture. Yeah. And they were like, this is going to be our big hit of the summer. Perfect.
Yeah.
But
those
then
leg
Friday,
those leg warmers, they don't actually make you warm. You know, that was the big,
yeah, exactly. They're really gonna like, you know, blow the lid off the aerobics industry.
This has been going on too long.
You
take this thing down.
All right. So
but,
Eric,
but one thing, one thing I want to say about why I think The Lost Boys is also better than Fright Night. It's also the ending. Like I was saying, like The Lost Boys, it's a great ending. The ending of Fright Night is the ending with a lot of horror movies. Just kind of like gets goofy and falls apart. Like, weren't they like in the house and the house is like crumbling and like going down the hell or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it gets like the final fight where they go there, Roddy McDowell and the guy from Herman's Head, William Ragsdale, they go to get Amy, who was the chick from Married with Children.
Yeah.
And because they kidnapped her and they have to kill Jerry Dandridge and his weird roommate. And there's also like not a lot of, there's a lot of things not explained in it. Like there's people that are creatures in it that they don't explain what they are. Cause the one guy, his roommate, you think is normal, but he turns out to be like a monster, but he's not a vampire. Yeah.
But he was like supposed to be a familiar. That's what I thought, you know, like this guy that just works for a vampire, but then, yeah, it takes a weird turn.
But like, then he turns into like a werewolf or something. I don't know, but it's just sort of out of nowhere. It's like,
I guess that's the studio. Like I would say that, but if he says they just kind of left him alone, like this dude, like people get like, did you ever see the movie 30 Days a Night?
I like that movie,
but I know it.
Yeah. Well, it was based on a comic book called 30 Days a Night. It's basically the same thing. And the guy, Steve Niles, who wrote the comic book, he used to come into a restaurant I worked in LA and I was talking to him about it. And he said, when they were trying to make the movie, that like the studio's executives are like, well, what if there's like a diamond underneath this town and the diamond will give the vampires these special powers? And he's like, listen, bro, they're fucking vampires. They just want to come to this town and drink blood. That's it. We don't need a fucking diamond. Like,
right. Like it's already stupid, not
like,
real.
Get their, like dirty little hands in there and make it.
We need to make
weird.
It clear. Like, it's just like if once you're already in that world, it's just like we're just that's why it's like when I'm critiquing it, it's sort of like, well, it's about vampires. So it's like, well, this guy's another creature. Why would that happen? That guy, that creature doesn't exist, but it's
Tyler,
all.
Tyler, have you seen Renfield?
I haven't. And it's key. It's I think about watching it because it's like on my Fire TV, like up next for you. But I just can't. I haven't brought myself.
I wanted to see it, but yeah, it looked okay. Well, let me ask you, did you see Us?
Did you catch Us,
the Jordan Peele. Did you catch the Lost Boys Easter egg?
Which was a loss, but I watch these things when I'm writing, so sometimes I don't notice everything. What was the Easter?
So at the beginning of the movie, where did they film
Santa Cruz boardwalk.
And they go, she goes, hey, they're filming a movie over there at the other end of the boardwalk. Do you want to go check it out? And he's like, no. And it's supposed to be Lost Boy because Jordan Peele Perry is a huge Corey Feldman fan, which is.
Oh, at least he has one fan. Yeah, that's good.
But, you know, Jordan Peele is a big 80s horror guy. And, you know, Corey Feldman was good in the 80s, you know, and that's a classic movie. But I always thought that was kind of a funny. He does that a lot. He puts a lot of like horror Easter eggs.
Did you see Nope?
Yeah, I saw it a couple of times.
I wish, I thought the part with Steven Yeun and the fucking monkey, like that whole part was the best part of the movie. Like I thought that was so fucking genius. And the rest of the movie I didn't care about.
I don't remember what was the monkey part?
That 5 minutes?
Yeah. And how he explains it when he explained what happened, he used an SNL skit that they did on the movie. Like he wouldn't talk about it himself. He would only talk about it through an SNL skit where Chris Kattan played the monkey. And the way he directed the scene with the monkey, I thought was so fucking genius.
No, it was great.
He was so good at that. And I'm like, why didn't they make the fucking whole movie?
I don't know why. From what I remember of it, I don't even know why that was a big aspect of the movie.
It had nothing to do with it. He was just the one that like owned the town or whatever this area was where these things were coming.
No, you're right. That was like a very, and it opens with that, right?
Yeah.
Like kind of the aftermath of that.
Like where they go meet Steven Yeun and they find out he's like this child star that was on that show.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you would make a movie about that. And Jordan Peele, if you're listening, make the fucking monkey movie.
Do you think he's, I feel like he's becoming a little bit of a victim of his early success. Yes,
I think I don't think he's a bad director by any means, but I feel like Get Out came out at a certain time where they put him on a pedestal. And
yeah,
and again, nothing against him. I think he's a very competent director and I like his movies, but like, yeah, I think he's slightly overrated.
I think Get Out was just so good out the gate and there was people expecting nothing from that guy.
Yeah, he was a guy from Key and Peele. Yeah.
Right. But I'm sorry, Eric, what were you going to say?
No, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, I just
cut you off.
No, I thought it was like it might be like the M. Night Shyamalan a Ding Dong thing where, you know, he keeps trying to make the Sixth Sense over and over again, you know. The movie,
he's come back though. I feel like he's made some decent movies recently.
He did, but the thing about him is like they gave him about 50 chances more than he should have had.
No, you are wrong about that. And we talked about this once. I'm like, why do they keep giving him movies? All his movies make shit tons of money.
Yeah.
Maybe not in this country.
That's true.
They're very profitable. You look at Wikipedia.
I guess you're right. It wasn't like a make-a-wish thing. Like, no. But it is. It did feel like...
I wonder if he does really well in India. I wonder if that's what like really... Because if you can go into that market...
I would imagine his movies, overseas would make a lot of money because, you know, horror movies are pretty... But it is weird. I do feel like he has come back and he's made movies that are good. I feel like there was like a string of 8 movies that every one was just like, what is this shit?
And he tried to do some weird twist ending that didn't work and it didn't really.
Yeah. Well, he got caught up in that.
Yeah. And that point, you guess the twist from like 3 minutes in. You're like, yeah.
Well,
like,
there was
Lady in the Water that he made that I think that was his worst one. Mm.
That was a movie that I remember I was talking to I think it was like my sister and her husband and they were like, oh, I loved that. And I was like, and I remember because they still quote it back to me. I go, that movie is unwatchable, which is like such an extreme way to describe a film that someone liked. Like, it's like, not only is it not good, like it's like beyond what it was like, that was a movie that like he had just lost. He's like a main character in the movie who's a genius. They're like, you're a great writer. You're going to write things that change the world because you're such a genius. And it's like, who wrote this?
well, I was pointing to what. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. I was just kidding. Don't you think you're losing the narrative a little bit when you're making movies about how you're a character where everyone's saying you're the greatest writer? I feel like that's when he had no perspective. No one was telling him what was bad.
Yeah, too many yes men around him at that
right.
point.
Exactly. Well, even the movie Signs, which I didn't like that much. And I always point to this, probably last time, Scary Movie 3, which makes fun of that. And I think in Signs, the aliens can't open doors for some reason. And in Scary Movie 3,
Scary Movie 3,
or something like, but they made the other thing and they're like, they mastered space travel, but they can't open a door.
I
think it was Water.
The one with Simon Rex? Is that the one with Simon
so
Rex?
Yeah, so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best one.
They spoof 8 Mile. I was flipping between Freddy and Jason and Scary Movie 3, and I was like, these movies look in like I switched from Scary Movie 3 to Freddy and Jason, and my girlfriend didn't see me do it. And she was like, is this still Scary Movie 3? Like, they just it looked you couldn't tell which was the horror movie and which was the parody. Because Freddy and Jason came out 2003, and I don't know what you're but like. The early aughts, the beginning of the like horror movies, I don't know what was happening. They had completely lost. They didn't know what to do.
It's like I can't really explain like what makes something an early 2000s movie, but I can fucking pick one out of a lineup just by like a cover of it, you know? Like
It's like weird. They become really glossy.
Yeah, they have a lot of stars, like a lot of young stars in it too.
They have young stars who are up and coming when it used to be.
Sarah Michelle Gellar was in like all of them.
Yeah.
Well,
yes,
and
was.
Also, but it used to be people would be in them before they had a career. It was kind of like the necessary steps because that's all they could get was a shitty horror movie. So they would have people who before they were famous and it was kind of like they had no choice but to do it. Then it became
It's like the Johnny Depp and the Kevin Bacon and
Kevin Bacon and Crispin Glover.
Yeah.
In the early aughts would be like, I know what you did last summer. Then the sequel is like, I still know what you did last summer. And like the other one's like, I know what you did 3 summers ago. I'm like, I think you guys gotta stop making these fucking movies.
That was it was a weird, it became the thing. It was like a rite of passage. It was like they were clamoring, the hot stars were clamoring to get into these movies.
It'd be like some like Maxim cover model, some fucking like shitty rapper they'll throw in there, you know?
Yeah. Busta Rhymes in the Halloween one.
I remember, wasn't Cisco in a horror movie or the thong song guy?
I think he was in H2O, maybe? No.
I think he was in something though.
But Kelly Rowland was in like a couple of horror. But anyway, something happened in that era. And then like it was like around the time when Jason went to space. That was when things were like going off the rails. And I was like, I don't know what horror movies are anymore. These aren't for me. They used to be kind of like almost underground. Like they weren't respected. They were kind of like you had to go find them and see. Well, this is another thing I thought was interesting because, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like Last House on the Left, those really raw, like gritty, violent movies. When you really think back before video or anything or cable, like, or, you know, to see these movies, you had to like drive to a place and like see Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like in a theater. I mean, what would that experience be like? Like I was going to say you probably wouldn't know what you were getting into, but I feel like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you can't really be shocked. Yeah.
But I told you I was reading about The Exorcist because the new one came out and they were saying about the original one where people was so scared. People were vomiting in the theater. They'd never seen anything like that.
It's just interesting. And also, you know, back then, you know, and even when I was, you know, younger, like you would choose a movie and if it was shitty, that was just kind of your night. You couldn't really, it was like, well, that was shitty. Now it's like, you'll put on something for 5 minutes. You're like, this sucks. Put something else on. This is
I'll put on like 5 different movies before I settle on something.
Right. And so,
but even with horror movies, I was never disappointed because if it was bad, you could just make fun of it with your friends. You would like, if you're watching it at home, be like, then you're like, he's going to get killed next, you know? You know, those movies from the 80s where anyone would have sex, you're like, they're dead. If they have sex in a movie, they're fucking whores and they're gonna get killed.
And
right?
that started, and the, you know, it's funny because that started around Friday the 13th. That was like, because Texas Chainsaw, they don't really have any. It's interesting watching it now because the tropes aren't really there because it's such an unformed, like tight, you know, like shoot, like John, like it's slasher, I guess, technically, but I don't really know exactly what it is. It's almost like its own.
It's not really slasher. I don't know, like home invasion.
What would you consider
that? I don't know, like home invasion reverse, I guess. it's kind of almost like Don't Breathe in a way, but
Did you ever see this movie that was like a parody of it, but was so bad? It was called Nothing But Trouble. It was with Chevy Chase.
And that Dan Aykroyd. Place in New Jersey. They drive down to Atlantic City and they get like caught somewhere in some South Jersey shithole.
That's
Digital Underground shows up and raps and Tupac.
Yeah, who was it? What was it? Who was it? The rapper again? Digital Underground, right?
Oh, it was Digital Underground. Yeah.
No, not Digital Underground.
That song. What?
I'll look it up. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, Digital Tupac. Underground is in there with Tupac's in the group and Shock G, who's Humpty Hump.
Yeah, Tupac's first verse on a song is in that movie. Same song. His very first.
Really?
And the judge is Dan Aykroyd, and isn't like fucking John.
I never saw it, but it's notoriously thought of as
horrible.
Like one of the worst movies ever
made. It's terrible.
Okay. So Eric, do you have a movie you want to?
This is going to be a little different because I couldn't. You guys know all the movies and stuff, but I just saw this, so it's fresh in my mind. So it's I just saw this documentary. It's on Freevee, which is a great app. It's an Amazon app. Everyone can get it. There's a Boris Karloff documentary. Really good. Really good. It talks a lot about Frankenstein, but it also talks about him in general because he's the OG of the horror guys. Well, a little bit after Bela Lugosi, who Bela Lugosi had turned down Frankenstein. He was in Dracula, and they wanted him in Frankenstein, and he's like, they're like, he's like, nah, I don't want to be typecast or something like that. And then Bela Lugosi ended up being in tons of horror movies anyway, as did Boris Karloff.
Wait, did Boris Karloff, is he Dracula?
No, he's Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Yeah. Okay. And when I was
in, Lon Chaney, who was the Wolfman, that was like the right. big three.
And in my film class, I remember in college, my teacher loved Frankenstein. It is a good movie, but he was like, this is one of the best movies ever made. I'm like, I don't know about that, but we'll go with this. But it is, they say technically it was a masterpiece. Even the sequel, The Bride of Frankenstein, was this director, James Whale, who was very innovative. But the one thing they talk about in Frankenstein, everyone, you definitely know this. They cut that one scene where he throws the girl into the water.
Why?
So this is what originally happened. Frankenstein sees this little girl, right? And she's throwing flowers into the water. And then he starts doing a Frankenstein. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, you're out of flowers. You need something else to throw in the water. So he picks up the girl and throws her in the water and she drowns, right? They said that preview audiences saw it and freaked the fuck out, like freaked out. So they cut the scene. But one guy said, he goes, it's almost worse because you almost think he must have done something to her, but no one knows. Like you figured he maybe raped her or something like that. So one guy was saying they should have cut out the scene because it's, you could have think of something worse that he did, Frankenstein, to the girl. So,
I thought that scene was in the movie, though. It's been so long since I've seen Frankenstein.
Yeah, I think now you can, when you see it, it'll probably be in the movie. But when it first
Young Frankenstein? Doesn't he like?
They make fun of that. Yeah, Young Frankenstein is basically a parody of Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein. Because there's a scene in Bride of Frankenstein where he meets a blind man. And you remember that in Young Frankenstein where it's Gene Hackman?
Gene Hackman, yeah.
Yeah, and he pours like the hot water on his balls or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen Young Frankenstein.
What? Oh, really? Oh, it's so funny.
What?
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen that. I should check that out.
Dude.
It's still good. It's
and you,
like,
no,
it's
in your
really
business,
funny.
That you watch it immediately, right? Am I wrong?
I mean, I saw it when I was really young and I remember when I was young, I was like, it's all right. But then I just didn't get it when I was young. And then the older, I think I watched like a year ago and I was like, wow, this is,
well, you know,
I don't usually love Gene Wilder, but he's really funny. In it.
Yeah. And he wrote it with Mel Brooks, and that scene where they're dancing, putting on the Ritz, you know, that's a famous scene, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently Gene Wilder wrote that part, and Mel Brooks was like, this is too silly for the movie. I think this is Mel Brooks saying something's too silly. That's crazy. And but he talked him into it. And it was the most popular part of the movie where he's dancing to that song.
And also Terry Garr, isn't it? She's like super hot.
Super hot.
Terry Garr was super hot.
In this movie, and Madeline Kahn is pretty hot in
it. She fucks Frankenstein because he has a big schlong.
Yeah. Don't they all kind of end up fucking him or something?
Oh, you have to watch. You'll enjoy it a lot. It's a short movie anyway.
Have you ever seen Frank and Hooker?
No, but I know it. Is it, have you seen it?
Yeah. He's like, it's like this mad scientist from New Jersey. And it's a Frank Henelotter movie who made like the basket case movies and shit. And he basically gets all these parts of hookers and builds like a super hooker, but she just wants to go out to the street. So she ends up back in the city, like trying to turn tricks.
Wow. Like
this giant, like,
I want to see this.
So wait, would you consider it's Frankenstein. That's a horror movie, right?
Yeah,
that
would be I think it's considered like one of the first horror movies.
Right. I mean, it came out a little after Dracula. Yeah. It was Universal, made all the monster movies. Now
what year did it come out? Was that the 30s?
1931. And that's why Universal, they were known to do the monster movies.
Yeah.
And now they're trying to bring it back with these. Renfield is in that, but they're not really doing that well. They're doing.
Guillermo del Toro is doing a new Frankenstein with like Andrew Garfield's in it. And
He's in this documentary. And he's like, loves Frankenstein. I think he's probably jerked off to this movie. That's how much he loves it.
Do you remember when they remade it with De Niro?
I don't think I ever saw it, but I do remember it looked like
it was going to be like a really big movie, and it just kind of came and went. I think it was really bad.
He's like, hey, but a little bit of fire, fire's a little bad, a little bad.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was kind of like De Niro and Rain Man.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, like I remember when I was young and they would show me, I don't know if you had this experience, like, you know, I'd see like an old movie like that, like Dracula or whatever, like Wolfman. And, you know, I had been raised on like Friday the 13th and like Halloween. And so when I saw those, I was like, what's scary about this fucking shit? Like, yeah. I didn't, you know what I mean? Just after seeing all these new, like the new wave, almost like postmodern horror movies that were just so, I guess you were saying that Hays Code was in effect. And so when that went away, it was just like the shit that I remember in the 80s, some of the horror movies that came out were just like, oh my God, I can't believe there's a fucking movie that's like, I can go see.
But the weird thing, like Frankenstein never picked up a woman in a sleeping bag and smashed her against a tree.
Like, remember there was like a movie called like Pieces?
Yeah.
And it was you'd see this. I'm sorry, go ahead. What?
No, I was just going to say, you were saying about the Hays Code. That actually started in the mid 30s. So the early 30s horror movies, I think I kind of talk about it, were much darker. And then then it started to change because there were rules about it stuff. So
yeah,
that's why, I mean, you have to remember also, I mean, obviously you look at Frankenstein now, it's not that scary, but like at the time people were fucking shitting in their pants. It was the scariest thing they ever saw in their life.
I mean, could you imagine someone from that time seeing like Texas Chainsaw Massacre? So, I mean, they just must have their faces must have exploded. All right. I know we're pressed for time. So, all right. I wanted to also talk about a movie from this year that a horror movie, like one of your favorite. All right. So I'll go first. The one I saw this a few months ago and it really kind of blew me away. It was this movie called Talk to Me. It's an Australian horror movie.
I thought you were going to say,
and I'd heard
Barbie.
About it. Yeah, that too. Have you seen it? Did you see
it? I have not seen it yet. I know what it's about, kind of, but it's like similar. It has similar things to something I'm working on, so I've kind of been pushing it off.
That's probably a good idea.
But I want to see it. I it looks good. Everything I hear about it is great.
It's basically, you know, the premise is these kids have a this like hand. I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, it looks like almost like a zombified hand. And, you know, they say that basically if you shake hands with it, you can you get possessed by a spirit and they make use really well of like teen culture now and social media and all that stuff, how they're so obsessed with like, you know, documenting everything because it becomes like an internet like kind of not sensation, but almost kind of like underground thing that no one really believes it's true, because they'll show kids like, you know, holding the hand and they're like clearly possessed, but everyone's like, it's not true. And the thing I really liked about it is, and this is what I like a lot about really good horror movies, because I was talking about before, like it's very allegorical for drug addiction.
Yeah.
And it's really weird too, because I've noticed in like a lot of not just horror movies, but like movies in general, like the best ones are like, they're all like foreign now usually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause it's these directors who became huge on YouTube for doing kind of like horror videos on YouTube. And they had this deal to make it. And then an American studio offered them more money. And they were like, no, we just want to make it our way. they're like, no, we want to make it good. Because they were like kind of, I mean, you probably ran into it where they kind of got so many things changed that they didn't want to change.
Yeah, that's what happens. They bring in, it's like every person that comes on has notes and you have to take their fucking notes and work on the fucking notes. And then and then eventually you just get taken off and they bring in a new writer, and he gets taken off and they bring in a new writer.
Yeah. I think I was just surprised. Like, I thought it would be good, but it really did affect me. It is scary. And one thing I really liked about it is it ends really badly. Like, it ends on a really bad note where everything just nothing is resolved at the end. Like, they don't kind of get out.
Don't
of
give it,
it
away. You know? I want to see this.
I don't want to give, but like, it's funny because it was like they did a really good job of, you know, setting up the main character and you actually having sympathy. So when you leave, you're kind of like, I feel bad for her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I felt it was like a bummer. And I was like, man, why did they do that? And I'm like, it's a horror movie. I should feel bad when I'm leaving the movie. You know, I shouldn't be like, that was great. That all worked out at the end.
but I like how you say, I like those movies where they have deeper meaning or, you know, like allegorical, you know, because if you see like a werewolf movie, the only thing you learn is like, don't get bitten by a werewolf. You know, I think I can.
I picture maybe, werewolf once, and they're like, you should make this an allegory for trans. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm not going to do that, but thanks.
Well, when you write something, do you like think, do you have that in mind? Or you're like,
no, oh, I think that comes later. You try and work that in, like the subtext. Yeah. You like kind of look at, you're like, what does this really mean? And what, and like, how can I work?
Right. I feel like that happens. A lot of people write a thing and they're, it's almost kind of like instinctual, and maybe not even, they're not conscious. It's like a subconscious thing. But I will say there are a lot of horror movies I loved and I didn't understand. I didn't see the metaphor allegory until I read about it. Or I'm really into like seeing something now and like reading people who are smart write about them and analyze them.
Because like, then I'm like, what did this all mean?
I'm like, someone tell me what this meant. Yeah. But like, I'll be like, oh, okay. And that was, you can see it in it that it's very allegorical for drug use, but it does really, and peer pressure and yeah, so that's, and it, and like I said, it's really dark and it ends badly for everyone, and there's no like way out. And
what's the allegory for harrowing. What's the allegory for what's it, Jason in Space, that one?
It's an allegory for quitting while you're ahead.
Is that the one after Jason goes on a boat ride, aka Jason takes Manhattan?
Yeah, that was part 8. There was a whole other one in between that one. See,
Jason should have been there the same time as the Muppets.
Like an hour from the city, he could have taken a cab. It wouldn't have been that expensive.
Well, one of the first stand-up jokes I ever thought of was the whole, I don't know if you've probably seen it. He's first of all, it's like the movie centers around Camp Crystal Lake High School's prom. Yeah. And I'm like, this lake has a fucking high school. I've never heard of, you know what I mean? Like, and it's so cheaply made. There's like 20 people on the prom boat. They go on a cruise to New York, and then Jason gets on the boat and starts murdering everyone. And then there's a storm and they get on a raft, and then they go to they row to Manhattan, and then there's a shot of Jason pulling himself out of the water at the dock in Manhattan. And I'm like, this whole movie is based around the idea that Jason drowned as a kid because he didn't know how to swim because the counselors hadn't taught him, but they just forgot all that shit. And so now Jason's cool just shot. Swimming to Manhattan.
Oh, he swam. He didn't take the ferry. Staten Island ferry.
He was on it for a while.
Well, apparently Crystal Lake is not that far from the Hudson River, I guess. I don't know.
It's over by like the Delaware River, so it's like the span of New Jersey at the top. It's like close. It's like close to Pennsylvania.
I do love how like straight across. There's no through line in those movies where like it'll be one time it's a camp and then it's just kind of like someone's house and then like. But the other thing I love is two years ago, I was with my girlfriend visiting her friends in Connecticut, and I Googled it because I was like, I think one of the Friday the 13th movies was filmed in Connecticut. And it was right, the second one, we were right near the camp where they shot it, and we went to the camp where they shot Friday the 13th Part 2.
That's so cool.
For me, I was like, oh my God. It was...
That's the one where Jason's got the bag head, right? In the
that's
eye.
The ba- It's Jason's first movie. It's the first one where he's killing. And it's, people think of that as the best one of the series. Like, I've literally read articles and stuff. People like, this is clearly the best Friday the 13th
I always hear
movie.
The one where the Corey Feldman's the kid.
The fourth one.
Is that the fourth? It's like the final chapter or
the
something?
Final chapter. Yeah. So full of shit.
And he like shaves his head and chops him up at the end with a machete.
Yeah. Corey Feldman. That was when he was a fucking badass. All right. So anyway, do you want to go into yours? I don't take up too much time. Into your favorite one.
Yeah. I it did not come out this year and it's not a movie, but it's very recently. It was Midnight Mass. It was from 2021. Did you see that?
No, Mike Flanagan.
Yeah, Mike Flanagan. Oh, he's came good. Out with a new one this year and I haven't watched it yet. House but of that Usher. Was my favorite of all of his. That was like his vampire movie. And they're essentially like long movies. So you know, it's like an 8-hour movie.
I just watched Follow the House of Usher.
That's the one. Was that any good? I know that's the one.
I thought it was really good. I really, you know, I like him, but I'd never seen, I didn't watch the Haunting of Hill House. I'd never watched that.
Bly Manor was boring as shit. What was that? Bly Manor. He also made the sequel to The Shining. I don't know if you saw that.
I was going to say Dr. Sleep was really good.
That was pretty good. And then he made this movie called Oculus a few years ago, which I think is one of the best things he's ever done. That was insane.
I saw that. That's good. It's weird. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect, but yeah, that's the mirror one.
Yeah. But I think with Midnight Mass, it was like his vampire movie. And it's essentially like, it all revolves around a priest played by Hamish Linklater, who should have, it was like one of the best performances I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Fucking homeboy from what's that show? New Adventures of Old Christine. That's the only other thing I know him from.
Oh wow. Is that the Julia?
Yeah, the Julia Louis Dreyfus, the guy that played his brother, played his priest. That guy like, but he like crushed it in his role. He was the best. But it's like this small town, and he's a priest, and he thinks a vampire is an angel. And he brings this guy into a town. He found a vampire in the Middle East when he was on like a pilgrimage to Israel or something. Brought this vampire back to a small town, and he thinks it's an angel, and he's saving everybody. But he brought a vampire into this town.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
That's
it's on Netflix.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Yeah, I was looking that up after watching this House of Usher, because I was surprised at how much I liked this. I was like, do you see any like deep allegory for that one specifically?
I don't know. I was trying to think about that. I was thinking maybe because it was 2021, kind of like maybe something with COVID, you know, where it's like an island and they let in an outsider and he kind of just turns everyone into a vampire. So
right.
Along the lines of that. I heard it was something that he's been pitching for years around Hollywood and no one ever took it up until he started making these miniseries for Netflix and they finally.
Just on a side note. So like with the writer's strike and everything, what were you like just doing a lot of writing?
Yeah, I wasn't really affected in my day to day. I had like a development thing going with a company that's not a struck company anyway, but they were like, we were doing working and he's like, you know what? Have fun with the Irish strike. Just go off and write it and we'll reconvene afterwards. So that's what I did.
So is that what you did? You just kind of like wrote
a lot? Yeah, I just wrote. Yeah.
Do you sit down every day and write?
I try to. Yeah.
There a certain time of day or?
I do it in the morning. Usually I drop my son off at school. Both my sons, they got to be there at 7:35 at the latest. So jeez. After I get them to school, I come home and usually eat breakfast and then go to write.
What's it like when you sit down to write? I mean, obviously you probably just force yourself, but like, yeah, are there times you're just like, oh, well.
I smoke a lot of fucking weed.
So that'll help.
That eases me into it. I'll kind of sit down and put on a movie and kind of blaze something and then like get my notebook out. And
I do that too, but like, I don't get to the writing.
You get to the writing part. But then there's also times where if I'm like on draft and I'm like actually like have to like work and I know exactly what I'm doing, then I skip the weed smoking and just go
yeah.
Right
into it. Does a weed smoking, does that help you? You think?
I think it helps me come up with things. I think if you're a fucking writer and you don't smoke weed, you're I don't know what you're doing.
It's kind of like you're like trying to fight with one hand tied behind your back.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you can open up this whole other perspective in your head. Like, and I don't do anything else. I was, I was completely sober, and I was like, you know what? I remember I was really funny when I smoked weed, so I started smoking weed again. So that's all I do.
Yeah,
weed, but. I feel that's like it
this should be like a drug PSA. Okay.
Yeah. Look, I know comics who have to do it right before they go on stage. I could never do that. I could just
smoke before they go on stage,
like immediately before, like immediately, yeah. Like you're next. And they're like, hold on a second, you know,
and it's so weird. I've performed high and it doesn't help me. It just, I don't, my timing is off. I feel like I'm already paranoid when I'm performing that no one's liking it. Mm, so that just puts a new level of like, oh shit, they're not, you know, I get really in my head and then I forget what I'm talking. I just get paranoid. It doesn't like help me, not for performing. Yeah.
I wish because I thought like I would never smoke weed when I did comedy back in the day. And now I'm like, in retrospect, I'm like, man, I should have just smoked weed. Cause I feel like my timing was always off. I was always like stepping over the laughter. Like,
Maybe. I don't know. Some people are, it definitely.
Everyone's different with it. Some people are really good with it.
It worked for me. Like, it just made me, it didn't help me. But I do think writing and coming up with ideas, definitely. It definitely sparks your brain. You're looking at things from a different perspective. It is weird how many times I'll think of something. And a lot of times I'll be like, I don't know if this is genius or I just think it's genius because I'm really high, but it happens to me all the time.
But or also like if I'll write the whole fucking script and then I'll like get high and I'll go back and review the whole thing. And it's like you get like a whole different perspective on it. It's like you're a whole nother person looking at it.
That's actually really good. I like that. I could see how that would work.
Do you, Eric, do you have another last movie to wind this down?
Well, I brought it up to you before. It's on Amazon now. It's horror comedy, that Totally Killer. Did you see that?
Oh yeah, that was good. I like that.
Yeah. It was a combination of a slasher movie and Back to the Future. They keep referencing Back to the Future. They know they're ripping it off.
Which I thought was a good idea, because the second I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is like Back to the Future.
Does someone...
But here's the thing. You just watched Mad Men, right, Tyler?
Yeah. Sally Draper is the main character.
Yeah, she's the little girl on Mad Men. Really? She's all grown up. You're like, holy shit, she's hot. Yeah.
Oh, but Sally Draper is the kid?
Yeah. It's basically she goes back and there's like she's in this town where like there are all these murders back in the 80s. In 87 it happened. And her mom was like, all her mom's best friends got murdered. And she basically goes back in time to try and stop the murders. But her mom ends up being like her mom like runs the school and is a mean girl and like picks on her and shit, which I thought was pretty funny.
That was a good angle.
I was like, that's genius. And I love when they, because I have kids in school and dodgeball doesn't exist anymore. It's not a thing. Okay. And her playing dodgeball was fucking hilarious. Because that's what would be my kid. Like, they would just not even know what's going on.
They just think dodgeball is just too, it's too mean.
Yeah, she just thought it was brutal. She's getting hit in the head. She's like, what the fuck is going on?
That is hilarious.
But that's where they mine a lot of the jokes. The main jokes come from how things are so woke now and soft. Yeah. And how different things were back then. There's a scene you probably remember. It's kind of like Back to the Future, where she goes to sign up for the class for the school. She's like, I'm a new student in the school. And the woman behind the receptionist is like, okay, here you go. Go to this class. She's like, that's it. I don't have to do anything else. Because it's the 80s. Everyone just took you on a word.
Go to school?
I mean, everything. Like, I remember, I just remember like airports. There was a time where you could just go pick up someone at the gate. You can just walk to the gate.
I remember my dad I went to visit my uncle in Texas. We just walked me on the plane. My uncle was there just as soon as I got off.
Yeah, remember when you could
just snuck on the flights I wasn't even on.
Yeah, I used to bring bombs on the plane. It was so easy back in the day, man.
You know, there used to be a thing you could buy a ticket. Like, I saw this a couple of times. People, you could buy your ticket on the plane.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Isn't that all the old movies where they have to get on a plane? They're like, just give me any ticket. Like, you couldn't do that today. That would take four hours to get on a plane.
Just give me the ticket. I got to get out of here. Yeah, no, that's everything. I mean, God, those are the times. And then, dodgeball. I mean, that was like, I feel like we played that every day.
Every day, yeah. We did
the
something.
Point
my
of the game
my kids hate gym. They fucking hate it. They're like, it's exercising. That's all it is. And I'm like, gym was fun when I was a kid. It was like brutal.
Oh, you just threw things at people. Who you just got your aggression out on people you hated.
You know what I hated?
Yoga. They did yoga the other day.
Oh, God.
What the fuck yoga was in the 80s.
The thing I hated the most is I think we did it to the presidential achievement, whatever it was, but you had to climb the rope. And when I was young, I had no upper body strength and I couldn't fucking do it. But they made you do it in front of people. Like, it was so embarrassing. Yeah, so
we didn't do that. I
called in sick once because I didn't want to do it. What?
Oh, really? I just threw balls at people climbing the rope. That was my. We didn't have that climb the rope shit. I just felt like it was dodgeball. I felt like gym was just kind of like go run and find something to play.
Yeah, just like get it all out and then
like grab a ball and start throwing it at things. Like, I would be on dodgeball teams and I would like switch teams in the middle of the game.
That was
like
chaos.
I
was going.
I mean, like, don't throw it in the face, and you like aim for the face and aim for the ball. like that was the whole point of it. It's like injure people.
Right.
Also, I love in that movie too, where like she's smoking weed with that girl, and she's like, "This weed fucking sucks." She's like, "You should see what kind of weed we get." So I can get a little gummy bear that will take you to the moon.
I remember Dana Carvey used to have this joke about how, and this was years ago, how much stronger weed is. He's like, back in the 70s, you smoke weed like nothing. You just go, my head's a little itchy, you know? And now it's like you smoke it, blows your fucking head off. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so great. It ruins your life.
You take edibles?
Well, you know, so this is the thing
Do you eat
edibles?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do it all.
Which one do you like? What do you like better, smoking or edibles?
Smoking. I do edibles like if I'm like in like if I like I went on a cruise with my family. Yeah. Edibles with me. Like that's when I eat edibles.
I went to a wedding with my girlfriend a couple of years ago and it was like, you know, kind of our first trip together, and I mean, she was like, "Oh, my friends will have edibles." And I was on edibles. It was 3 or 4 days. I was on edibles the entire time.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't really like smoking, but smoking is better because it's more controllable, right?
Well, yeah. I like the whole, to sit down, get my shit ready. I smoke. I'm high. Like edibles, you eat them. You're like, okay.
Do you like getting high and watching horror movies?
Yes. Yeah.
Does it make it scarier?
I don't know if it makes it scarier. I just feel like I can get into it more. You know, I'm more forgiving when I'm high. I guess I enjoy it more.
I think it makes me more. It puts me more on edge. It like it's makes not, me.
If it, like one thing I like doing better on is watching something I've already seen. I feel like that's better because like you don't have to like pay attention to it.
But I like how you said how you become a second person and have a second set of eyes. I like that. I think that's interesting.
Well, you do. My wife calls me Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde because I'm not smoking. I'm like yelling at the kids. I'm all angry and everything. I go in my office, come back out like a half hour later. I'm like dancing around the house with her, playing with my kids.
Do you remember? So this is we have to wrap up pretty good, but like. I think another reason why I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre stands out to me is because I don't know if you remember this actual moment. Probably not. I remember a moment in my life specifically. I must have been like 7, and I used to have a joke about it where I put my niece in replacement of me, but it happened to me where I was like 7, and you know, I was young, and you know, you don't know about the world yet. You don't know how mean and horrible the world is yet, and that people murder people because that really. That stuff doesn't really make sense when you think about it. You get used to it. But I remember seeing an ad for Texas Chainsaw Massacre and I was like 7 and I was like, what is this? And it was like a picture of the guy with the face mask, you know, of human skin with the chainsaw, like screaming at a girl on the meat hook. And I really remember that was like an impressional or really like memorable moment where I was like, what is this movie? Like, they're murdering people, you know, because it was like the first time where I came online where I was like, became aware, and someone was like, yeah, it's a movie about like they murder people with like chainsaws. And I was like, why would they, you know, because I couldn't grasp the concept of someone doing that.
I felt the same way after I saw La La Land. I was like, what the hell is this? I know,
but
you
do, you
like
know
that
what
movie.
I mean? Where, but it's like most people do, you know, because slowly that happens in your life. You just kind of become aware of it. And then you just accept like, oh yeah, like people murder people with chainsaws. Yeah. Like that's just life. But like, I really had that moment of like, but why does this exist? Like, I don't know why. And then it's just, I don't know why it stayed with me. I guess it was one of the most like shocking, jolting images I had ever seen. So I think that was like my first foray into like horror and violence and, you know, killing, you know what I mean? So it's such an odd.
Well, you
so
know,
I think now.
And you said he thought it up while he was in a hardware store and he saw Chainsaw, right?
Yeah, that's what he claims. Some people kind of really.
What if he was in a bookstore? That'd be a whole different movie.
just happened to be. He just went to the hardware store that day. It could have been anywhere.
Thank God. Yeah, thank God he wasn't in a mallet store with Stephen King. A croquet mallet store. Croquet mallet store.
What if he was in a sex toy store? You know, the Texas Dildo like, Massacre.
So to bring us all the way back around, like Stephen King saw The Shining, Kubrick. He's like, oh, Jack Nicholson and an axe? You know, I'll do you one better. How about Steven Weber with the croquet mallet?
Now does he we're have talking the croquet fucking mallet in that version?
What?
Yeah, he does.
Oh, he does? Okay.
Well, in the book, it's a croquet mallet.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying that.
It's scarier in the book, I guess, because you can't see things. And, you know, he's good at describing things. But, dude, I mean, what's more terrifying than your dad using an axe to break down the door to murder you and your mom? I mean,
if you're going to cast someone who a Jack Nicholson role, like Heath Ledger did well as the Joker after Jack Nicholson.
The guy from Wings.
Yeah. You could do a little better with the casting. That's all I'm saying. Not a knock on Stephen Weber.
The second best character on Wings.
Stephen Weber was barely passable on Wings.
Yeah. Tim Daly definitely carried that show.
All right. Well, we got to wrap up. All right. This has been fun. Everyone, have a happy Halloween. I want to thank Tyler Tice for coming on again.
Yeah, I want to see this Midnight Mass. That looks good.
You should check it out. It's good Halloween watch. It's only 8 hours.
Check that out, and you should check out Halloween Resurrection. Was that the Busta Rhymes one in 2002? Can I just ask you this real quick? Did you see the reboots of all the Halloween reboots?
I think so. I saw. Yeah, I did.
What,
I believe.
What did you think of them?
I liked the one of them. I think it was Halloween Kills. I didn't like the wait. Is Halloween Ends is the one where it was like the young kid was Michael Myers for some reason.
Yeah, that one
I wasn't a big fan of, but the one before that I thought was all right.
Really? I didn't like Halloween Kills. That was the one. I liked the first one because it was most close to the original, I guess. And then I liked Halloween Ends just because it was different and weird.
What's the one where she eats all the Activia? Which one is that one? The Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's
Halloween
that
Farts.
Should be more of them. She's it. Did you see any of the new ones, Eric? The last three that Danny McBride made.
Oh God, yeah. What
is this? David Gordon Green, because he's buddies with David Gordon Green.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that shit. I don't know why. I saw the new Exorcist sequel. It's so fucking bad. It's like,
really,
it's really bad.
How do you ruin an Exorcist movie? I think it's like a slam dunk, right?
Because they were like, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna have two possessed swim girls in this one. Like, whoa. It's kind of like twice. I love when they do that. Like, we have to have two this time. But anyway, it's really disappointing. And they were gonna do like a trilogy, and I think that they're canceling it because it was so bad. But I can't figure that out. It's a weird pivot that
he came from like Eastbound and Down. I think that's where he like started, or like that's where he
they know. I don't know. David Gordon Green is one of the weirdest directors. He does like fucking Pineapple Express, and then and then he does Halloween. It's just,
he did a bunch of indie films, like that George Washington movie.
Yeah, he's just, I don't know, I can't tell. Whenever he comes out of the movie, I'm like, all right, like it's just, it's very hit or miss.
Well, you know, it's so funny how it's like Chris Rock did a Saw, didn't he do one of the Saws or something?
He did like the last one, I think.
Danny McBride, Jordan Peele. It used to be comics would always want to be singers. Now it seems like they just want to do horror movies.
I think it's because they don't do comedy movies anymore. I think they have to. There was a guy that I used to know, he was in The Whitest Kids You Know, Zach Craiger, and
you said that movie was good.
Oh,
Barbarian.
Barbarian, yeah. That guy was on The Whitest Kid You Know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Uh-huh. But you can see the comedy in that movie, though.
Yeah, like, there's funny. It has comedy in it. It's good. It's good.
It's really good because of the way, it's not so much the movie. It's like the way the movie was told. Like, it's not so much the story itself. It's like the way it's told. Like how they brought you into the world.
Yeah, how it keeps cutting back and forth, and like Justin Long comes into it like about an hour in, the jumps. No, it's good. It's
and Justin Long character, he comes up and like he's like singing in his little roadster, and then gets that call. You think he's being like set up, and it turns out he's just like a fucking rapist.
Yeah.
Kind of like set that all up.
I've said this for years, like, you know, comedy movies have just kind of fallen by the wayside, especially.
Yeah, I mean, what's the last funny movie you've seen?
One of the big comedies that came out, like a mainstream comedy with a budget, was that Jennifer Lawrence No Hard Feelings movie came out this summer.
To be like, everybody said it was so great, but I didn't.
You know, I thought it was okay. I it was better than I thought it would be, but
it's streaming
not
now.
I mean, it's like,
yeah,
it's fine. It's very unmemorable. It's kind of funny. It's just sort of like not, but that's. I don't know. They don't really make money anymore. So I think they all, and I think a lot of the ones that are pivoting hard into horror, like I think they really were fans of the genre before. So I think it was a natural pivot. But anyway, all right, I have to go. I'm sorry. This has been, I keep getting sidetracked. All right. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming out, Tyler. And we'll be in touch. And
definitely.
And all right. And thanks everyone for tuning in. Happy Halloween. And thanks for tuning in. Last Exit of Broken. We'll see you next time. All right.